Welcome to the Virtual Velo Podcast. Chris is with me as always, and this is episode 35. And I'm delighted to say that today we're going to be joined by none other than the inaugural UCI World Cycling Esports Champion, Ashley Moorman-Pasio. But before we do that and talk to Ashley, Chris, I do want to give you a bit of a background, a bit of an overview and a bit of a palmares of Ashley as I can. I'm not going to give it all because honestly, I had to stop reading somewhere. It was a very, very long, but there's some really key highlights in that. I also know I'm conscious of Ashley's time because she's away on a training camp at the minute. But Chris, as you know, that she was the, of course, the inaugural Cycling Esports World Champion back in 2020, if I remember rightly. Ashley Moorman-Pasio, South African professional road cyclist, currently rides for the UCI Women's Continental Team, which is AG Insurance. Sudal Quickstep, should I say. Hopefully I got that right. I think I did. And we are going to talk about that because I know you signed, Ashley. We're going to pick you up in a minute, but I know you signed an extension there as well. Competed in the 2012 Summer Olympic Road Race, finished 16th, and in the Women's Time Trial, finished 24th. Commonwealth Games, you won bronze medal. And I think you were 15th in the time trial there as well. Numerous other podiums and victories, a podium at Flesh Wallonne, or Lower Flesh Wallonne, Giro Rosa, numerous African, South African road race time trial championships. There was too many of them to count, to be honest. That was a long list. And of course, a few top tens in the road world championships and then the Tour de France avec Zwift, Chris, which I know we're going to ask some questions about as well. So a great guest to have on the show, Chris.
Yeah, actually, you know, the list of victories, the list of road race titles, it's, you know, extensive, of course. But I wanted Ashley on the podcast because I think that she's impactful, you know, way beyond the victories and then the palmares, right? You know, sports are just a game, as you know, and cycling esports is literally a video game. And many of the athletes just want to put their heads down and just pedal, right? They'd rather not get involved in some things, or they just don't have the vision to use the platform to impact the community more than just the victories and the great results. From what I know of Ashley and from what I've seen of her, she isn't satisfied with only pedaling her bike. She wants to use her place in the sports landscape to champion causes and to be a role model. And sports, especially growing sports like cycling esports is, they need those role models. Like, you know, like your little one, Si, they need somebody to look up to, you know, to want to emulate, to get into the sport. Ashley is one of those athletes that transcend sports, and I'm really, you know, proud to have her on with us so that we can ask her about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys, and yeah, thanks for all the kind words.
No, you're very welcome. I mean, let's talk about the current road season, first of all. You know, I know we're going to talk about the virtual world and some of the activities you've got going on and the Rocker Core Book Active. There's a lot to go on, but I want to ask you about this season. You've had another incredible season on the road that's just gone. Do you want to give us a bit of background on how the season went for you and what you've been up to since the season ended?
Yeah, it was a really nice season with the AG Insurance Sudal Quickstep project. It's a really cool project, something that aligns very well with my value system. So, you know, it's about developing talent. It's about creating the full pathway from junior all the way to elite. And so, yeah, it was a special year having, you know, obviously the leadership role on the team, but more than a leadership role, also, you know, quite a big responsibility in mentorship. And yeah, that's the big reason why I'm still around as a pro cyclist, is that, you know, I am more than just a bike racer. I'm a purpose-driven athlete. I like to have other, you know, goals and objectives outside of bike riding, and just to have a positive impact on the people around me. So, yeah, it was a great season in that, yeah, there were some really nice results, but more so, you know, it was a great season of growth, you know, growth for the team, for the riders on the team. And I really love being a part of that. It did mean maybe that we missed some of those like victories that we were aiming for. But again, the big reason why I'm continuing for another year with the team is because I really feel that we've laid the foundation together as a team. You know, we've all come together the youngsters have learned so much in the season. And so I believe we'll be reaping the rewards of that hard work next season. So yeah, I mean, we started off with a bang with a victory in a tour of Valencia, which was really amazing. I was the leader, but then my teammate took the win just by seconds, and it was just tactical, textbook stuff, seriously. Like the team just rode so incredibly well in terms of, you know, perfectly timed breakaways, you know, coming together, putting pressure on the other teams. So that was a really special way to kick off the year with the team. And then, yeah, some really strong performances in the spring classics. Then, you know, nice podium in Burgos. Top 10 in the Tour de France Femme of Aix-Swift. Of course, I was hoping for a bit more for a podium spot, but yeah, I had some challenges towards the end with saddle sores. But yeah, feeling motivated than ever to keep putting the hard work in and looking forward to the next season.
Well, the sport is really lucky to have you for another season, I must say. So, you know, it's a unique athlete that's able to cross over, and we see that sometimes. And you know, you rarely see an athlete that does it extremely well. So I think it's interesting to ask you, how were you introduced to Zwift in the first place?
Yeah, so interestingly, I didn't enjoy indoor training at all for the majority of my cycling career. But come the COVID pandemic, I was in Spain because I live in Spain currently, and it was a really hard lockdown there. So we really weren't allowed to leave our house, and I had to make the choice, you know, do I sit on the couch and feel sorry for myself, or do I try to, you know, embrace the challenge and indoor training? And yeah, I chose the latter, kind of the type of person that I am. I'm always up for a challenge. And yeah, I mean, luckily enough, actually, I had a pretty good setup, because as pros, you know, with our team partnerships with brands like Garmin, Tax, even, you know, Zwift, I had an amazing setup with the perfect Tax Neo smart trainer and access to a big screen TV. And I just hadn't been using it. So yeah, I got onto the indoor trainer. And at first, I have to be honest, the same frustrations that I'd had in the past were very real. And that's the fact that I really struggle to get the same numbers on the indoor trainer as what I do outdoors. And I'm a bit of a like numbers person, quite perfectionistic with my training. So that was always my frustration about indoor training, is if I had intervals, because that's essentially, you know, what a lot of people do on the indoor trainer or on Zwift, is they do intensity work or interval work. And so whenever I had the intervals, I wasn't able to get those numbers that I was chasing. And that's what caused the frustration. And of course, the first few sessions were super frustrating. And I spoke to my coach, and he sort of said, well, let's just drop your threshold power by a little bit so that you can at least feel like you're executing the session well, and let's see how it goes. And then quite quickly, the community aspect really, you know, hooked me. So there was an opportunity, for example, a couple of pros, some of the Italians who were also in hard lockdown, sent out like an invite to join a meetup. And so I joined this meetup with a couple of pros, and suddenly I thought, oh, okay, this is quite cool. You know, in the COVID pandemic, you know, this period of isolation, you know, we're at our in our homes, but we're able to ride together. And then I started, you know, on rides, let's say a warm up before an interval ride, I'd create meetups with family, friends, you know, people all around the world. And that's what really kind of blew my mind in the beginning with Zwift, is that opportunity to connect with so many people, no matter where you are, you know, that ability to be able to ride with people back home in South Africa, to be able to ride with guests who should have been staying at Rocacorp Cycling, our hotel, but they couldn't. So that was the first hook. And then, you know, as the weeks passed by and I kept training on the indoor trainer, and then I gave myself a little bit of an easier period because I'd been training really hard. And then after that little break, I got back on the indoor trainer, and with the interval training, suddenly I started to see, you know, the numbers were the same. You know, I was able to hit the numbers that I could on the road on the indoor trainer. And that's when, you know, the penny really dropped. You know, indoor cycling, for it to be super effective, you should be doing it regularly. So if you want to be a good Zwift racer, or if you want to get good results from from your interval training, it should become something regular. And so, yeah, now, you know, I've also realized, you know, I see indoor training as well as a little bit of a combination of sort of gym work, so like resistance work, but in a cycling specific action. So I started to see I was getting stronger. You know, before I've been very much a climber and high cadence was, you know, my biggest sort of strength and how I produced the power numbers. But now all of a sudden indoor training in Zwift was allowing me to work on my weakness, you know, to work on brute force, on that sort of torque power, while, you know, having a great time, ability to join people from all around the world, people on all from all different abilities as well. You know, like you can do an interval session with anybody because it doesn't really matter what power you're doing. You know, you all stick together. You're all there encouraging each other along. So, yeah, I mean, COVID pandemic is what introduced me to the magic of the virtual world and of Zwift. And ever since then, you know, I've been totally hooked and just realized how to unlock its full potential even more and more and to make it a regular part of my weekly schedule.
I tell you what, Chris, I love it when we have guests on like Ashley. It makes the job so much easier. Ashley, you've said so much there in that section that I want to follow up on. You mentioned the pandemic there. And for me, I don't know what you think. I'd be interested to get your viewpoint. But the pandemic seemed to me like a shifting point for women cycling specifically. You know, and you know, I know you won the Queen stage of the virtual Tour de France, if I remember rightly. But I just remember that whole movement at that time, and where women's cycling seems to be not just in the esports but IRL. Did you feel the same thing? It just felt like a change of the tide, almost.
Yeah, 100%. I am a true believer that the COVID pandemic was the turning point for women's cycling, and it was because of the racing in the virtual world. I mean, if we take the Tour de France, the Zwift Tour de France in the virtual world, that was the first time ever, you know, that men's and women's cycling experienced complete equality. You know, it was the same stages, the same distances, the same amount of exposure. So to me, it was quite mind-blowing, you know, in this like hugely challenging year, you know, where so many people were brought to their knees in terms of, you know, business and the struggles of it all. For the first time ever, women's cycling had been elevated, you know, to a point of complete equality with men's cycling and with regards to the biggest sporting event in the world, the Tour de France. You know, beforehand, we'd had one-day La Course races by the Tour de France. But if you really go and analyze how those races were put on, the Tour de France had never really put their name to women's cycling. You know, it was La Course, you know, and all the communication or marketing about the event, it wasn't on the men's Tour de France channel, you know, it was on a different channel. So they'd never really put their name to women's cycling. And now in the COVID pandemic, for the first time, you know, the women were taking part in the Tour de France. And interestingly enough, you know, after winning that Queen stage, that's when it, again, like, it just became so clear, because the next day, you know, lockdown was finished in Spain. So the next day I did go out for a ride in the real world, and I rode via Girona and stopped at a coffee shop, and my husband sort of said to me, do you see that people are looking at you? You know, suddenly everyone's paying so much more attention to you. And I didn't see it at first, but then I was like, oh wow, yeah, that's true. And then as I was riding out of Girona back towards home, because I live outside of Girona, a car came up next to me and slowed down, and next thing a phone camera was being pointed out the window. And that was the first time that I really felt like, okay, this is what the Tour de France is all about. You know, it just brings cycling to such a huge audience, and it's such a game changer. And so it's really amazing how then, you know, obviously Zwift doing the virtual Tour de France for the ASO. And I really believe that that's the point where the ASO, you know, seeing the popularity of the event, seeing the TV numbers and seeing that it was just as good as the men, you know, that's when they started to change their mindset towards women's cycling. So I really do believe that the COVID pandemic and the virtual Tour de France was the turning point for women's cycling, and that it is the very reason why we have the Tour de France from Avec Zwift today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So You won that Queen stage in the Virtual Tour de France. Was that, or when did you decide that you were going to ride the UCI? Because of course you won the first UCI Cycling Esports World Champs. It was like Christmas time, 2020, if I remember rightly. At what point did you decide that you were going to ride that? What was it, a real focus at the time, or was it, yeah, we'll go and ride and see what happens? Can you tell us a bit about how that came about?
Yeah, the announcement came out quite late in the year. I can't remember the exact, but you know, the race was on the 9th of December, actually my birthday, strangely enough. But it's quite late in the year to be on good form, and especially when it comes to that kind of form, you know, like, you know, explosive VO2 type of form. But the moment that announcement came out, I decided I'm racing. And I spoke to my coach, and we found a way of making it all work together so that I could be on good form for that. And it became a really big goal, a really big target for me. And the big reason really is that, you know, as I got into pro cycling, and I got into pro cycling a little bit later in life, only in my early 20s, you know, my husband, who was the one to actually identify my talent, he kept saying things to me in the early days about, you know, you can be one of the best in the world, you know, or you can be world champion. And at first I really struggled to believe him because I thought he was barking mad. But, you know, through my career, obviously I started to prove, of course, I'm one of the best in the world. And yes, I've started world champion road races before with, you know, being one of the contenders or maybe one of the favorites. But the reality is that on the road, it's almost impossible for me to win a world title because I come from South Africa. I don't have a big team to support me. Just in general, like everything about, you know, racing to represent South Africa is just not conducive to really having a good chance at winning that title. So for the first time ever in my career, the World Championships on Zwift suddenly felt like a very real opportunity to win that jersey. And I think that's what makes Zwift so special, is that it is so accessible, you know. So at the moment, road cycling is very Eurocentric. It's really challenging for cyclists anywhere outside of Europe to make it as a pro in the peloton, let alone win a world title. And so for the first time ever, I felt I can do this. And I'm sitting on the bike, you know, just about to start that race. It was, once again, the first time in my career that I felt like no one's going to beat me. You know, they're going to have to work really hard to beat me because I was just so confident in my ability to go for that title. And of course, it was an exciting race. And Sarah Gigante, you know, came, you know, she really made me work for the title. But winning that was really special because now I can say, you know, I have been a world champion, and it kind of feels like, you know, I've ticked a box and a big goal that I've had throughout my career, but thought at some point would never be possible.
You know, it's really interesting because I'm looking at your face and I see you light up when you speak about the cycling esports world championship. And with somebody that's as successful as you are on the road, you would think that, you know, well, whatever, it's video games, it doesn't really mean very much. What significance does being the first esports world champion have to you? Is like, do you walk past that jersey and look at it and say, wow, that's one of the huge accomplishments of my career?
Yeah, I honestly do. And it was a difficult one to kind of digest in a way, because not everybody takes it as seriously. I mean, interestingly enough, most or all of the pros in the road really respect, you know, being able to get results in the virtual world and on Zwift, because they know how hard it is. They all tried, right? I mean, during the COVID pandemic, everyone had to try racing on Zwift at some point. But just like I felt it was very hard in the beginning, because of course I hadn't, you know, opened my mind to indoor cycling and I don't do it regularly. It's really hard, you know, to get results if you don't really embrace it and work hard to be able to be good in that space. So they all respect it. But yeah, I mean, some, there are still people that go, ah, you know, it's Zwift. It's not, I'm a real cyclist. I'm not a virtual cyclist, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm really proud of it because I believe, you know, I am a pioneer in the space. I believe it is going somewhere. You know, we see how popular, you know, Zwift racing is, and not only in the elite category or the pro field, but community racing. It's a big movement, and I do believe that it's going to go from strength to strength. And I'm very proud to be a pioneer and to be the first ever esports world champion, because I think it's going to get to the Olympics, and I think it's definitely establishing itself as its own cycling discipline.
I think it's great to hear that the perception of the cycling esports in the pro peloton, because, you know, Chris and I are from road backgrounds, and I still go out on the Sunday ride for a coffee and the odd local road race. And, you know, and there's still a little bit of old school mentality, I want to say, towards cycling esports. So it's really great to hear that in the pro ranks. I want to ask you about the Rocker Corber Collective then. You know, and what is it? How does it align with that crossover between the virtual and real world racing?
Yeah, hang on. I'm just going to quickly make a quick point on that, is that I think that's what's so important. That's what I realized also after winning the esports world title, is that it's super relatable, actually, to a much larger audience than what, you know, road cycling is, because, you know, there's so many people racing, and whether that's the A, the B, or the C, or the D category, you know, everybody knows how hard it is. So I feel like, in a way, to our fan base, or to, you know, to the general public out there, I feel like there's a stronger connection almost to an esports title than to a road title. So that's what also makes it really special. And then obviously, off the back of that, that's when I started to realize, okay, I need to do something with this. I've always had the ambition to build community. I've always had the ambition to help, you know, push women's cycling forward. Rocker Corber Cycling, our hotel and cycling tourism business just outside of Girona, at the foot of the Rocker Corber climb, was part of that sort of ambition before COVID pandemic. You know, I felt like, you know, I wanted to bring the different parts of the cycling industry closer together, because I feel that's one of the challenges in the industry, is that the parts, you know, they kind of exist too independently. You know, we have cycling tourism, we have cycling events, we have pro cycling, but they don't seem to really, you know, come together and complement each other as well as I believe they can. So I felt, well, Rocker Corber Cycling is a way of doing that. You know, me being pro, we can accommodate obviously the cycling tourists, and then give exposure to some of the cycling specific brands that are obviously, you know, sponsors of me or of my team, which is what they're looking for, right? They need access to the consumer. And then I had ambition, obviously, to get more women to come out and to join me for cycling training camps or cycling tours. But the one problem was, it's too intimidating for women to join a pro. So it used to be quite frustrating for me, because, you know, I am a type of pro that, of course, if I'm racing my bike, I race full gas. But if I'm doing something with the general public, I'm not out to drop them or to make them look stupid. So, of course, if someone's joining me on a group ride, I'd always go the pace required for the ride. But I just couldn't get women to feel comfortable sort of joining me for cycling tours or cycling events. And that's where, again, like Zwift totally changed that. So during the COVID pandemic, I did a women's only ride every Monday. And by hosting these rides, I started to realize that, you know, women are way less intimidated on platforms like Zwift and when they're on their indoor trainer. I think that's largely to do with the fact that they, you know, they're in the comfort of their own home, they feel safe. They also feel kind of more confident to put themselves out there, because, you know, people aren't, they can't actually see them, you know. So if they get dropped, you know, they're in their house, they could just sit up and get off the trainer and continue with their everyday life. You know, they're not going to be dropped from a group ride, or if they puncture, you know, there's no chance of being left alone or not being able to fix the puncture. So women are just more confident in general when it comes to Zwift. And so I started to see, well, Zwift is the space where I can start building community and getting more women to join me. And so, yeah, it was a culmination of everything. You know, the potential I identified of the virtual world, it was my esports title. And that's when I thought, okay, I need to do something with this. I want to create a community. And that's where Rocker Corber Collective started. It's growing from year to year. It's really great. It really inspires me as an athlete as well, to be able to join weekly rides, to connect with community members. I am a purpose-driven athlete, so kind of feeling that impact that I have on the people around me really fuels me to keep going. And I've even taken it one step further to create an empowerment project in South Africa to try and empower Black South African women in a township in Cape Town through cycling and through cycling esports. So, yeah, we're onto something, and I keep trying to keep growing the community now, also including men as well. It's really, really cool how the virtual world has just kind of, taken all those barriers away and created the ability to, bring people together to ride their bikes.
You very eloquently speak about the impact that virtual cycling has in being more relatable. And when you made that breakthrough, that you opened up your world to a whole other population. But there are some that would say that elite esports is struggling to get the viewership, to get the awareness, to kind of break through on that end. And something that you mentioned in an interview recently really struck me. You said you can't be what you can't see. A lot of people would argue that elite esports stars are not being seen. Mm-hmm. That the sport has an identity crisis, that the platform should and could market their athletes better. I always say putting a face to the avatar, raising the stars of the sport rather than using a traditional road cyclist as the face of the platform or the sport. What are your thoughts on that as far as focusing on the athletes that are on the elite level of sports to then utilize that in the community aspect?
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're getting at. Of course, the esports racing or racing on Zwift is not necessarily getting the viewership numbers that we'd like it to get, and for it to be able to move forward. I think, there's always, it always takes time for these new disciplines or for anything new to establish itself. And I think, it's a bit of a kind of give and take. I agree that it doesn't necessarily work to use, the stars on the road to try and kind of grow the reach of these platforms if these stars aren't engaged in the esports world. So I really do believe, like in my case, of course it's a perfect match because, I'm using Zwift on a weekly basis to do interval training because I believe in it. I believe that it makes me a better cyclist on the road and it makes me stronger. So then that's a natural fit. It's not in your face marketing. It's very authentic. And then, to continue, I think it is important for the esports stars to also then invest their time in the communities on the virtual platforms like Zwift, because that's where the power is at the moment, is connecting with those communities and growing your fan base, even if it is, very much a fan base that is into Zwift, because at the end of the day, it's the Zwifters that are going to be watching the racing and that are going to understand the nuances of it. They're going to understand the challenges of it. So yeah, maybe it is quite a small or niche market at this point in time, but if we look at the potential of the sort of gym world, out there, I do believe that virtual cycling has the potential to reach, maybe not the full extent of that, but at least a percentage of that, because it is so easy to do. You can have your indoor trainer at home. You can now, it's becoming easier and easier to even have trainers that are interchangeable between, or bikes that are interchangeable between different members of family. And where I believe, the real growth will come in virtual cycling and in Zwift's reach, for example, is I believe it needs to happen through schools and in countries where cycling is unsafe. So if I take South Africa as an example, it's really unsafe to ride your bike on the road. And that's a big challenge in the country nowadays to youngsters out there. Parents are scared, are afraid to let their kids ride out on the road. So I believe it's bringing, Zwift or virtual racing to schools in these kind of countries. That will help grow the reach. And then that's the way that you get the parents involved as well, because if the kids need to train to be able to perform on Zwift, well, then they need a Tax Neo bike at home, right? And then maybe their mom can try it out because, she's at home and, after dinner, she wants to, work on her fitness. So Yeah, I think we're at the tip of the iceberg, but it's about kind of finding the right channels to make sure that it grows.
No, absolutely. Chris said it's right at the start there. You know, people like yourself are role models. You know, and I'm sat here in between two bikes. I've got my bike to my left here, and then I've got my daughter who's 6 years old on a turbo trainer here. And I think you're exactly right. You know, putting this into schools, community projects in some areas, you know, not just, I guess, where it's not safe, but also where economically it's much more difficult as well is a big thing. But, you know, I think coming back to something Chris said there, having these iconic stars is really easy on the road because we see the athletes on the screen, we see the faces, we see what they're going through, we're seeing the communication with the teammates, but we don't get that. You know, I don't think, I'm just thinking about the Zwift Grand Prix now, when the Rocket Corba Collective ladies are obviously racing that currently. And one of the things I'd like to see, Chris, is those athletes shown more on screen. But Zwift Grand Prix, Ashley, your team are there, the Rocket Corba Collective, of course, and I've seen your name also on the list, but I don't think we've seen you start one of those races. It is, you know, we've got the Zwift Games coming up shortly as well, which is a big Zwift event that they're pushing currently. Are we going to see you racing and active on Zwift on a competitive level in the coming time?
Yeah, so of course my Rocket Corba Collective team are out there racing and giving it their all. I haven't joined yet, and that's just purely because of, you know, the timing in the season for me. So, one of the little like nuances that we've identified through the season is that, what makes me really good on Zwift is the fact that I'm very much anaerobically primed. So, my anaerobic capacity is my biggest strength. But what is happening, unfortunately, at the moment is that is kind of coming to the detriment of my performance on the longer climbs, especially in the tours, because just like a Ferrari car, for example, I'm always using a lot of fuel because I'm so anaerobically primed. So at the moment, I'm really trying to be super disciplined and work predominantly on metabolic work and on just, you know, bettering my efficiency on the bike. And yeah, early next year, of course, it comes the time to start introducing the anaerobic work again. So yeah, January, February are the months, and that's perfectly in time for the Zwift Grand Prix. I mean, the Zwift Games, should I say, which will be early March. So yeah, I'm definitely going to be on the start line and giving it my all on Zwift. I've really been missing the racing. But then just to touch on your comment, you're very right about, showing the athletes a little bit more than what we're seeing to date, because of course an avatar is not very engaging, because at this point in time, you know, they're not showing emotion, they're not showing the extent of the effort. And yeah, I don't know, like at the end of the day, you know, Zwift have their reasons, I suppose, why they want to prioritize, you know, their assets, which is, you know, the in-game visuals and the avatars. But I still think that there is actually opportunity then for the teams or the communities like Rocket Corba Collective. And I have this idea in my mind, but yeah, I'm yet to actually execute on it. But there could be an opportunity there, you know, to start kind of creating like our own sort of fan base. And I think there's nothing stopping the esports teams from creating the visibility of the athletes, whether that's using Instagram Live or I don't know what kind of platforms. I've still got to figure it out in my mind, but I think there's nothing stopping from each team broadcasting, you know, the real life visuals to their fan base. And there's plenty of platforms out there these days to make that possible. So yeah, that's definitely something I think we definitely want to explore, but I think other teams should explore as well.
So we'll certainly be cheering you on the Zwift Games. We hope you do really well. And we'd really like to be cheering you on for the 2024 Esports World Championships. And as you know, the bid for the Esports World Championships was awarded to a platform other than Zwift, to MyWoosh. So I'm curious, have you tried MyWoosh? Have you had any experience on other platforms? And do you intend to race the Esports World Championships on MyWoosh in October?
So I have to be honest, I've not tried MyWoosh, and I don't really feel a big desire to do so, to be totally honest. Like, yeah, Zwift is just my place, and it's where my community lives, and it's where my people are, you know. So yeah, it was really disappointing and sad for me to see that is the case. However, like, I do understand, you know, if we think of the platforms a bit like race organizers, you know, Zwift is the ASO and MyWoosh is the the Giro again, I can't even think of what, RCS. So you can understand, obviously, that the UCI has to kind of show, you know, equality to all the different platforms. And yeah, I don't really know what drove their decision to choose MyWoosh. But yeah, having said that, I mean, of course, Swift have said to me, I'm free to do whatever I want to do. And if I wish to race it, they obviously won't stop me. However, yeah, I haven't quite gotten my head around that, to be honest. I think it has been postponed, as far as I know, to later in the year, if I'm correct.
Yeah, October, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll have to see, you know, how that kind of falls into my planning. I definitely would like to race again, to try and win the Esports World title again, but where it will be this year or not, I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, as I said to you, yeah, my loyalty still lies 100% with Zwift, not because of any other reason. Sure, I'm an ambassador for Zwift, and people might say that kind of influences my decisions. But to be honest, that's not really the case. Everyone I interact with right now, you know, they're on Zwift, and I'm yet to meet people that are on the other platforms, which I think just shows, you know, the great work that Zwift has done to this point. And I think that's really in the community racing. You know, it's really incredible. They, you know, the number of people that, you know, get on their indoor trainers and line up on the start lines on Tuesdays to race all around the world is really, really incredible. And it is a movement, and it is the future. That connection between elite racing and community racing is the future of esports racing. I mean, that's the beauty of what we do at Rocket Corby Collective. You know, the elite racers who race, they are the directeurs sportifs for the community racing teams. So on the Tuesday night, they're the ones nice. On the Discord, you know, cheering the community members on. And I just really believe that that's what makes, you know, esports racing so powerful, is that really close connection that you can have between the highest level of racing and the community racing. And it's the community racers who then form the fan base, or the people who want to, you know, connect and watch when the elite racers are racing. So yeah, I think Zwift have done an incredible job of that, and I commend them on that. And yeah, I'll have to see what I do later in the year around the World Champs. But yeah, right now focus is on the Zwift Games.
No, good. It's incredible to hear that that link as well between the elite side of the Rocket Corby and the community collective, because I think that's an area that sometimes not just virtual teams but teams struggle with. So it's great to hear that connection. I don't think anyone would doubt as well the work that Zwift have, or the hand that they've had in the equality, you know, across cycling as well. I cautiously ask this question, but I guess now your racing career is winding down. We know you've extended another year contract wise, and I feel like there's some unfinished business at the Tour de France avec Zwift as well. But what is the plan for the future? Do you see an increase in your presence on the virtual platforms? What's the plan? What does it look like moving forward?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I have another year on the cards. Yeah, Tour de France Femme avec Zwift is a big goal. That podium, I'm really, really striving for that podium. So yeah, I hope I can make that a reality next season. And then yeah, of course, the virtual world. Whether it's the end of my road career next year or not, we'll see. But there's still a long future ahead in terms of what I can do in the virtual space. You know, one of the great things about virtual cycling is, once again, that it's, you know, it's so accessible. You know, so if it means, you know, starting a family or falling pregnant, you know, you can still be active on Zwift till really late stages because of the safety of being on the indoor trainer. It also is really powerful in terms of the connection I can have to my home country, South Africa. You know, even though I choose to live in Spain, that's my life now. It's where my business is. I can still play very much a mentorship role to young athletes in South Africa, or to, you know, in the case of the Culture Cycling Academy, which I'm leading at the moment, you know, being able to join workout rides with these, you know, developing talents. So that's really powerful as well. Yes, I'm definitely very motivated to look into making Zwift racing, you know, a bigger thing in South Africa, in the schools. So that's something for sure that's on the cards. But of course, I will be forever active on Zwift and in the indoor space. I really genuinely love it. You know, and some people think I'm crazy. Even my own husband, he's like, why are you going to sit on an indoor trainer in a room right now, even when the sun is shining and it's beautiful outside? It's because that's where my community is. That's where my people are, you know, and that's what really drives me as a cyclist. So beyond my road cycling career, for sure, I'll still be active, still be leading Zwift rides, maybe more Zwift rides than what I do now, because I'd obviously have the time and the capacity to do so. And for sure, esports racing is something I'll continue to be involved in.
Ashley, you've been an incredible guest.
I'm even a bigger fan of Ashley Mumenpasio now. I've tremendous respect for everything that you're doing, and I look forward to hearing more about the impact that you're making in the cycling community on the bike and off. I really do. Thanks,
Chris. Thanks, Si. It was great chatting.
Yeah, thank you, Ashley, and myself, Chris, and I'm sure the community really appreciate your time today. I know you're busy over at Training Cup, so thanks again, and hopefully we'll get you back on soon again, because there's many more questions I noted down through that interview. So thanks for your time today, and we'll see you soon.
Awesome. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you to Ashley. That was Chris. You pulled another rabbit out of hat. What an incredible guest.
You know, Si, I can't agree with you more. Incredibly insightful, incredibly thoughtful, thought-provoking. You know, it's obviously clear that she's an ambassador for Zwift, but I thought that she couldn't have been more authentic in her viewpoints and the ability to utilize the platform for making an impactful change. And I really hope that we do see her on multiple platforms. And I do hope that her second stage of her career is an esports specialist, because I think that she could be a star in the sport for a decade or more.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, considering how much time she clearly has to spend on the road, you know, in racing the season, her knowledge and understanding of not just the platform, but the community and the sport and what it needs and where it's going was amazing. Really fantastic. It's great to see, you know, someone of Ashley's stature and position in the pro peloton have so much knowledge of what's going on in this side of the sport as well. So a really good indication for the future, I think. Chris, it's that time where we're going to move on to cycling shorts. And you know, I have another nickname for this, which is Chris Investigates. And I will say to the community out there, if you want any more information on any of the following topics that we're going to discuss in cycling sports, please go and visit thezamunike.com. That's also, if you've got any comments, feedback, leave them on the show notes or the particular stories that we're going to talk about. First of all, Chris, I want to talk about this new Zwift offering yearly memberships. I got the email. I'm sure you got the email. I pay monthly at the moment. You know, with this offer, I think it was 2 months free, essentially, if you were paying annually. You know, and again, they were also strengthening this Wahoo partnership. But I want to focus on the reward, this loyalty with moving to this annual plan. Is that a customer retention reward benefit, or is that sign of maybe a weakness or something else, do we think?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I know this is something that people have been asking for forever, and in my opinion, Zwift was right to not have yearly plans. Why, if you're a platform that's, you know, demonstrating significant growth,
yeah,
why would you offer yearly plans? You know, your monthly subscription model is what's getting you money, and if you're gaining users, then you don't really need to worry about retention. So, you know, it's interesting. So the people who are going to be purchasing these yearly plans are the people that already are avid on the platform, right?
Yeah, like
so,
you and I, right?
You know, yeah, exactly. You know, in fact, my membership expired today, and I'm going to get on the yearly plan, and I'll do that, you know, till the end of time, right? So does Zwift really have a motivation to decrease its profit by $30 a year per every single person that, you know, utilizes that option? It's a 17% decrease in revenue. You wouldn't think that that's something that you would want to do if you were in a growth phase, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes me, yeah, like you said, that's a significant drop in revenue there. And, you know, we've discussed this before, but the ultimate end game, as I remember, I think, you know, I've heard this on different podcasts, and, you know, I've heard Eric Min talk about this, but it's to go public, right? It's to become an IPO. You know, so how, and to do that, you've got to show significant revenue growth. So where is that revenue growth going to come? Is it going to come speculatively? This is me making, you know, guesses, but is it going to come through other partnerships with maybe hardware manufacturers?
You know, that's interesting because, you know, the hope is that, you know, both companies, you know, Wahoo and Zwift, by working together, will make each other stronger, and they'll come out on the other end, you know, more robust in this partnership. I hope that that's the case. I know that you're a big Wahoo fan, so all my stuff is Wahoo. I hope that, but, you know, Zwift hasn't had yearly memberships up until this time for a reason. So I hope that this isn't a sign of things to come.
Yeah, I know. You know, I have a feeling this relationship is going to get stronger, and I do see, you know, me personally, you know, I've not read anything or seen anything of this, but I think there's more things to happen in terms of that relationship. I mean, let's look at it historically. You know, they had significant growth. Zwift, I'm talking about, through that lockdown period and that pandemic. We then, you know, their growth was going to come through hardware. But then we've seen this partnership develop. So I still think their growth will come through hardware, but I think it will be through a partnership, whether that be acquisition one way or the other. You know, Wahoo have had their historical issues in the past, but I speculate I may revisit this podcast in the future and be right or wrong, but maybe that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, it seems like both companies see now that there's a pie. The pie has already been defined, and now they need to get their slices of the pie, and they're trying to get as big a slice as they possibly can, right? There are no more pies being baked.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, that's Zwift and the annual memberships. I want to talk about verification and Indievelo in particular, because I know you did an article on this, but I see now that Indievelo are doing real-time flagging.
I know it's happened to you. It happens to me all the time. You get into a race and there's somebody off the front hammering away at 5.5 watts per kilo, and they're hammering away at 5.5 watts per kilo, and it doesn't change. And you know that there's something up, right? It wrecks the race. It, you know, or they're pedaling with a unique style. So from the research that I've done and speaking to the folks over there at Indievelo, they now have real-time flagging for, I think the transition has moved over to all ranked events. So they have different tiers of competition, basically, and the organizers can change, you know, the equipment standards, the verification standards, and to be eligible for a ranked race, you have to, you know, adhere to those standards. So now they have algorithms in place that will flag and remove riders that are not pedaling correctly, you know, for sticky watts, if they exceed certain thresholds that aren't consistent with human performance or aren't consistent with their past performance. So it's really interesting because it's just the next step in the evolution of esports, and it's a huge innovative step that now there's real time flagging. They've been leading the way with performance verification. Of all the things that have happened over at Indievelo, this could conceivably be considered one of the most significant breakthroughs as far as performance verification and authenticity and credibility for cycling esports.
Yeah, no, I think being able to flag riders, not only flag them, but have them removed from a race pre or during the race would be great, because, like I say, we've seen it so many times where they ruin races. I'll tell you the other incredible thing about Indievelo. You know, I'm in numerous social media groups just, you know, to follow what's going on with the different communities in the cycling esports space. I know that a lot of the RGT crowd moved over to Indievelo, but, you know, we're a few weeks on from that now, if not a couple of months. But growth in that community, from what I can see from the outside, seems to be incredible. And this is an organization which, I guess, doesn't have the money. Like, it can't have the millions of dollars or even billions of dollars that Zwift and MyWish are throwing around. So it's pretty impressive what those guys are doing over there.
They don't have a marketing budget, right? They're just, it's kind of just a word of mouth type of thing. You know, I like to think that I've been doing a decent job of getting the word out. But if you kind of crunch the numbers and, you know, just like extrapolating the number of racers, the number of riders that are on Zwift at one time and the number of riders that are on Indievelo at one time, it's about 1%. And I've you know, discussed this with, you know, with the folks over at Indievelo. So they've only been in existence since September. They're now 1% the size of Zwift, which doesn't really seem very significant until you compare that to the other platforms that have been in existence for much longer, that have, some of them have a seems like an endless resource for marketing. It's really leads me to believe that there's a tremendous market for authentic, incredible racing, and that people really value the product that's being created over there. And then I know that you have some viewpoints on how that's going to play out in the landscape in the future. And I'm hoping that we're going to be able to explore that at some point, you know, whether there's going to be, whether it's going to be seen as a credible competitor, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, let's talk about competitors. MyWish is becoming more accessible again. I noticed the last week that MyWish introduced macOS, and even Apple TV is on its way, it's cited. So I know they've been doing the beta testing for the macOS devices currently, and I've seen a few in the community there, but hopefully, again, that will also move over to Apple TV and become more accessible.
Yeah, that's one of the major complaints with people on the message boards, is that the equipment and the hardware requirements are, you know, really extensive to get on MyWish. And it seems like it's an ongoing thing, but they're trying to become more accessible. They're trying to get on mobile. And incidentally, that's another thing that IndieVelo has recently launched, is that they're now on Android devices. And that just basically paves the way for them to transition over to Apple TV and other mobile devices also. So both of those platforms are trying to become as accessible to as big a population as possible. So yeah, it's, you know, it's another step, and I think it's really great.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, back to Zwift again, I'm afraid, but it is that time of the month, I would say, or the season, but it's this season on Zwift has just been released today, I think it was out, Chris, if I remember. Chris, yeah, and I saw your article today on this season in Zwift, and obviously Eric Schlange at Zwift Insider and Shane Miller, GP Lama, has also done their regular releases when it comes out to this, but it seems to be the focus is on more about personalizing your Zwift experience rather than cycling esports, Chris.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of gamification there, and you know, when I attended the original This Season on Zwift press conference, I was told that they're doubling down on esports. And, you know, we went over all of that. And it seems like there's a lot of gamification, not a lot of racing. We were told, of course, about the Zwift games, and it does sound amazing, but we don't have a significant amount of details.
It's still
about
pretty quiet.
That.
It's still pretty quiet.
Yeah, they did speak about it in this release as well. But I want to know more about it. You know, hopefully we can find out some more of those details, maybe even have a Zwift representative on. That would be great to discuss it, because I think it could be a huge event. Like, if they want it to be their version of the World Championships, then it would be really great to know a bit more about it, and, you know, how it's going to be great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We are hoping to get someone on Zwift, and hopefully they do answer that call and we get someone pretty soon before the games. But just in brief, new level structure. So levels now go up to 100. Of course, it was previously 50 and then 60. Climb portal updates. So you can choose the, I want to say intensity, but yeah, there's like a 100% version, 125% version. If you want to go easier, you can reduce it down to 50%, 75% and so on. Ride streaks, which I didn't know anything about until I did the update. I think it was yesterday. And then I noticed all of a sudden at the end of my first ride in 14 days, having not ridden for 2 weeks from being poorly, that I got a ride streak of one, which is like a weekly accumulative ride streaks. But it was good because it added to my XP and I leveled up instantaneously. But talking about the lack of gamification, you've got to tell me more about this digital games of the future that's happening in Kazan 2024, Chris.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So, you know, like I've mentioned in the past, you know, I have people that bring stuff to me, you know, sources, and we debate it and we discuss things. And someone brought this to my attention, and I'm going to just try to explain it to you. It's the Phygital Games of the Future, Phygital. And apparently it's a company that's based in Kazan, which is in Russia.
Yep.
Right. And next year, 2024, February 19th through March 3rd, they're having these Phygital Games. They're $4.5 million are up for grabs for a number of different esports games. They're going to have an extended program where they're giving away another $500,000. And a portion of that is for cycling esports. $150,000 will be at stake for the team that wins the cycling esports portion of this. So there are teams of four. They have to be from the same country or nationality. And one of the elite riders brought this to my attention because I think that they were actually considering going. You know, whether you're, you know, ethically, morally, or even whether you think it's safe to be, you know, competing in Russia, you know, that's not the reason why I wanted to bring this up. I just wanted to bring it up because there is tremendous influx of capital in certain areas around cycling esports. You know, this is not the first time that one of these games has come up. So, you know, there is money being infused into the sport. So there is a I guess a demand there. It's just platforms are, you know, trying to get that piece of the pie.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Have you any idea what platform they're using for that particular event? Or
yeah, actually, they're using BeCool, and I've never ridden on BeCool, but I've spoken to other people who have when I heard about this, and they didn't really have a lot of positive things to say. I've never tried it myself, so I'm not really sure. But I know that you are trying a number of different platforms, and when you're speaking about the money that's being infused into cycling esports, you know, on this other platform that you race on Sundays, you know, with the Sunday Race Club, they give away some cash. Is any of that cash getting into your pockets, Si?
A loaded question, because you already know the answer, but it's good timing because Christmases are coming as well, and you know, five children, we need all the help in this household we can get, I can tell you, Chris. But yeah, you know what? I mean, I've had 2 weeks off because I've not been well, but actually November, I did the November championships. I think that was the first final I'd rode. So the MyWoosh championships, basically, they have a qualifying race every Sunday and you need to do a minimum of 2 qualifying races to qualify for the final. And November was the first month I managed to qualify for the final. I even got a team together. You know, we've got a level racing team on the platform now as well, which is great. Or in category 3. You know, I'm really enjoying MyWoosh. You know, I know I've said this to you a lot off air, but the racing is really tough. I mean, really difficult. The races, there aren't short punchy races on MyWoosh, you know, not that I've tried yet. They are, you know, anywhere between 60 to 90 minutes. And there's a lot of climbing in those events as well. I got told off by one of my teammates as well, because the one thing with MyWoosh is when you're racing, you all wear the same color jersey. So we all wear blue, I think, in category 3. But I go for the sprint segments. There's no value in the sprint segments. You know, there's no points jersey necessarily. There's no money in the game. But just so I can stand out in a jersey, you know, and obviously the team broadcast it as well. So it's always nice to get your name on the broadcast at the same time. So I got told off, but I think I got third in one of the qualifying races. So cash in the pocket again. And I can tell you, it's a reasonable amount of money that you could be earning over there. You know, and I just want to point out to the listeners, I am not a Zwift A-plus rider. You know, my 20-minute power is about 4.4 max. So I know it's not, you know, low level, but I'm certainly not up there with the big boys. Nowhere near category 3 on MyWoosh. So we qualified for the final. And then, yeah, we picked up, I think we were second or third team overall, which is an even bigger prize pot. And that's split between the 4 or 5 riders that you got in the team. So yeah, it's the first time I've ever taken any prize money home from a cycling esports event. I mean, we spoke about MyWoosh and accessibility, you know, which they're working on. It is not easy to go and race on there. You know, we've spoke about before, you've got to do a power passport test. You've got to video it. You've got to video your equipment. There's regular weigh-ins, you know, which I can see are being checked on a regular basis, the way it works. So, you know, it's not easy to race, but so far the racing has been incredibly engaging. Even I found myself when I'm not racing, I am watching the broadcast, because just seeing and hearing the same names on a regular basis, there's like a story to follow on a monthly basis. So yeah, probably waffled on a bit too much there, Chris. But yeah, the first time I've ever taken prize money home from a cycling esports event, and I'm nowhere near the power ratings of some of those top guys. That's the brief of it.
Well, I'm really happy for you. And you know, I think that I would see myself going for those jerseys, or, you know, the polka dot jersey, because, you know, as you know, we don't have that option on some of the other platforms, right? You don't get to wear an actual climber's jersey in game when you win the segments.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you like me, you've been around a while. You know, after those Tuesday night WTRLs, you used to log into Zwift Power and you know, refresh until you could see that. You know, if you were lucky enough to get one of those digital gold, silver or bronze trophies after a Tuesday evening. But I did find myself logging into MyWoosh. You know, so it's all there on one platform. You don't have to go to a third party platform either and see my name with that polka dot and sprint. In fact, I picked up both that week, that qualifying race. I picked up the polka dot and the sprint jersey that week. Like I say, no points in there, no money in it. But it was nice to see the name on the screen with that jersey next to it. So all about that.
Well, it's fabulous. Well, congratulations. The only way to end would be to wish happy holidays. You know, it's a time of year when you want to thank people for their support, and the Virtual Velo podcast and the Virtual Velo network has really grown significantly this season. And now would be the perfect time to just thank everybody and just express our gratitude sincerely for the support that we get. And it's not a coincidence that, you know, we wouldn't be doing the things that we're doing if we didn't have the community backing us as well, you know, like Ashley spoke very eloquently about. So I don't know, Si, I want to, you know, really thank all the people that are nice enough to listen. It's humbling. It really is.
No, absolutely. Chris, I want to say thank you to you as well. This is it's been an incredible year for you and I as well, starting this journey of the Virtual Velo Network and this podcast being part of that. But absolutely, thank you to you, the community. Don't forget, you can join in the conversation and the discussion over on the Zamunike or even the chat at the bottom of your selected podcast platform. Thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for the support over this season. And we'll see you very soon for another Virtual Velo podcast.